Hello, my name is Sasha Lachine. I am from Chateau d'Esclan in Provence, the best dry rosés in the world. I'm bringing you these wines for you to consider drinking them forever.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. You know that I am particularly fond of champagne and equally fond of dry rosé, in particular the dry rosés of Provence. And I suppose that really harkens back to an experience I had many years ago where I lived with a couple in Fréjus. And I remember going to the grocery store with them, and we'd be picking out cheese, which would just blow your mind. And then in the wine department, it was almost exclusively rosé, dry rosé. Just phenomenal image I have in my mind that I would like to pass on to you, because there is no better wine besides champagne for pairing with the largest number of diversity of food than a dry rosé. Joining us today on Wine and Dine is Sasha Lachine, who has taken the world by storm, subtly at first, and now as a very big, powerful tsunami, trying to convert people who are dry wine drinkers into the pleasures of dry rosé. He holds a huge segment of the market in the United States for dry rosé. And his property in Provence, which is not far from Fréjus, is called Chateau d'Esclan. And there are several wines available in the United States: Whispering Angel Rosé, Chateau d'Esclan Rosé, Chateau d'Esclan Les Clans Rosé, and Chateau d'Esclan Guerou Rosé. And then there are two other rosés, Le Poussin Rosé and Sasha Lachine Single Blend Rosé. Now, there are other wines available, but we're focusing our conversation today on rosé. And Sasha Lachine is joining us today from Boston. Is that where you're at, Sasha?
It's exactly where I am, yes. Good day to you.
Now, I'm curious because I've been trying to secure an interview with you for quite some time, and you were living in Hong Kong. So what made you move from Hong Kong now to Boston?
Well, you know, selling wine or making wine, let's say, is one thing, but trying to get it to market is another thing. And this business really consists of shaking hands and making friends and selling wine. And there's no substitution to being able to go out to these different markets and to go down to the streets and to work with distributors and salespeople and to present, to meet and greet, and as well as to do wine tastings and everything else that sort of goes along with the promotion of wine. So I originally had set up shop in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
In 2008.
Okay.
Because to build a world brand, basically, or to build a global brand, you need to start in the United States for the most part, because the U.S. wine writers do with the English writers probably control today or influence probably mostly the world markets.
Okay.
So the work was to get out and about in the U.S., and from there I moved back to France for a year to make sure that the production was all ramped up and everything was ready to go. And I moved to Hong Kong for a year to be able to start to influence the Asians.
Yes.
To drink rosé. And rosé, you know, for a long time was cheap and cheerful and considered to be. And we've come a long ways from the days of Matus and Lancers.
Oh, I love your very politically correct, polite word of cheerful. But in fact, what you're making at Chateau d'Esclan is rosés for aging.
Yes, well, we've, when I had visited about 32 properties over 8 years, and I was trying to identify the proper terroir, because obviously without good fruit, you can't make good wine, like a chef with his ingredients. So it took me a while to find exactly the terroir that I was looking for, and I stumbled onto this property that had a tremendous amount of old Grenache vines, and I was looking to see if we could make rosé into a real wine. So I embarked on this project. I went to see Patrick Leon, who had made Mouton Rothschild, Almaviva, and Opus 1 for 23 years. And we said, let's try to make something serious. And he said, what do we do? And I said, well, let's try to make something that in the event that we can't sell it, that at least we'll like to drink it.
I like your philosophy.
So he said, well, what do we want to drink? And I said, well, you know, I love a lot of these barrel fermented whites that come out of Burgundy. And let's see if we can make something serious and take a bit of a champagne marketing approach.
Yeah.
In the sense where we've taken four different products. So we made Garousse the first year, which was a total of two barrels of wine, two big barrels, because we ferment these in 600-liter barrels just to not taint the product too much with wood.
Mm-hmm.
And barrel fermented them with these old 80-year-old Grenaches that we had, and did some batonnage, which is stirring of the lees at the bottom of the barrel to extract a bit of creaminess and fat and flavor out of the lees that are at the bottom of the barrel, and produced that top wine. And then he said, well, what do we do after that? I said, well, we cream off another level, and, you know, like a Burgundian first growth, maybe.
Okay.
And then we made Chateau d'Esclant. We took a sort of a bit of a Bordeaux approach where we had Chateau and then second wine of Chateau. So we ended up with Garousse and L'Eclant and Chateau d'Esclant and a brand which we created after. We have a chapel at the Chateau, and in the chapel there are these cherubs above the altar, and there are these angels. And I was in the chapel one night, and I must have had a bit to drink and thought that they were whispering. So I said, whispering angel. And so we created these four different products. And, you know, you go up and down the ladder. One goes by the glass onto restaurants or hotel lists, and the other one is on the wine list, so you can go up and down. It's the concept of Dom Pérignon and the Brut Non-Vintage, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone can really understand the way you're comparing it to the marketing-wise, to the wines of Burgundy and Bordeaux and Champagne. It makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Give a little bit more information. As the L'Eclant Rosé is from 50 to 70-year-old vines.
Yes, well, we have 80-year-old vines, 50 to 70-year-old vines, 25 to 50-year-old vines.
Okay.
And younger vines, because we've replanted quite a bit.
Okay.
And basically, you know, as a vine gets older, it produces less, but what it does produce is more complex flavoring of fruit, because the roots just dig down deeper into the soil through different stratospheres of soil to go and get different minerals and different foods that it needs. So you might have a vine sometimes that's a meter and a half tall above ground level and can go down to about 5 meters down below ground level. So it's true that as you go up in age, it produces less, but what it does produce is more flavor, more concentration, and more complexity. So we took the older vines to really sort of make this Garousse, and then, you know, they're a little younger as you go down, and then something that produces more, which is 25-year-old vines, we made Chateau and Whispering with.
If you don't mind, talk to us about the Le Poussin Rosé and the Sacha Lachine Single Blend Rosé.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, you want to cover the different market segments. And, you know, I've always felt that there's quality at every level. And I think as far as the single blend is concerned, it's a Vin de France, which is a new appellation in France, which encompasses the entire country of France. So if you want to go and get very good Grenache in the Rhone Valley, you can. If you want to get good Saint-Saulve, down in the southern Languedoc region, you can. If you want to get some Cabernet Franc up in the Loire Valley, you can as well. So that gave us liberty of movement to be able to produce something which is not like the Côte de Provence rosés that we produce at Château d'Esclon, but that have a bit of the same esprit or spirit, I
would
say.
Yes, yes.
Of these wines that we make. So we made Single Blend, which is a very quaffable bottle of wine, and with a screw cap on a sort of a New World packaging style.
Yeah, yeah.
Easy to drink and easy to open. And Le Poussin Rosé is something that I started years ago. We'd actually started with a red and a white wine called Le Coq Rouge and La Poule Blanche, and then they eventually had a chick, because a Poussin in French is the child of a rooster and a hen.
Mm.
So, in any case, and these wines were absolutely made to be enjoyed and drunk in large quantities, cold and in a good atmosphere.
We're going to go to a short break here. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Sasha Lachine on Wine and Dine. We'll be right back.
If you would like to learn more about the fabulous dry rosés of Côte de Provence, check us out online at www.côtedeprovence.fr, spelled C-O-T-E-S-D-E-Provence. And keep listening to Lynn on Wine and Dine.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. We're continuing our conversation with Sasha Lachine, who is in the States right now. And really, there are a lot of us who are already in the choir. So he's not preaching to the choir. He's talking to people who are, you know, are not familiar with the joys of drinking dry rosé. And the name of his estate in Provence is called Château d'Esclon. And the websites are two websites you can learn more, and one of them is sashalachine.com, and the other one is cavplural.desclan.com, and we'll have links up for you. And so let me ask you this, as a comparison, the idea of Côte de Provence compared to rosé is a bit like what champagne is to sparkling wine. Comment on that, if you would, please.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, there's a lot of sparkling wine made throughout the world and some good sparkling wine, but for some reason, when you open a good bottle of champagne, it always seems to be better than what you've been able to find in different parts of the world. And some of the great champagne houses have gone to Australia and they've gone to California and they've produced some very good sparkling, but never of the quality of champagne. And Côte de Provence, for the time being, is a bit of that. There's a good amount of rosé produced throughout the world. But when you take it back to Côte de Provence, a bottle of Côte de Provence always seems to be better. So the comparison is very much that way. And Côte de Provence to rosé is what champagne is to sparkling.
Okay, I'd like to quote from an interview you did. You said that your father gave you one bit of advice in particular that you really have taken to heart with your quest to be making, as the Pope of Rosé, and that is, don't join a trend, set a trend.
Right. He used to say, we don't follow trends, we set them. And we tried with this Rosé. It was a big risk, to be honest with you. Rosé, as you know, always had a cheap connotation, and now, bit by bit, because of people traveling, I think, a lot to the south of France, and what people drink down in Saint-Tropez and Nice and Monaco and in the boating community has now spread a little bit throughout the world. And it's true that the U.S. has really started to catch on, because it's been double-digit growth annually, and it's amazing how the market has matured and developed, because rosé does begin a bit white and it finishes a bit red. As you say, it marries a tremendous amount of foods and wide varieties. And funnily enough, when you start drinking quite a bit of rosé, sort of towards the end of the dinner, you don't necessarily always feel like a bottle of red wine.
Yeah.
So it just sort of goes on and on, and it's become a real wonderful drink. And I think it's really here to stay. I don't think it's at all a fad. And I think these Provence styles, very light rosés, because the idea of top quality rosés, or the perception of the consumer or the drinking consumer today of rosé, is that the paler the better. So, and that's because you get a lot more elegance. It's more Grenache, it's more Sanso, it's a bit of roll, which is Vermentino. So you end up by making these quite iodine-y, wonderfully tasting, light, elegant rosés, as opposed to these sort of heavy, darker-looking Syrah-based products, which have macerated much too long with the skins of the grapes, because, as you know, rosé is made with red grapes, and the inside of a red grape anyway is white. So it's just the amount of time that the skins sort of stay on the juice, which is where you get the color. And everything that we do is not a, there's no maceration whatsoever. It's all free-run juice, meaning the juice just runs through the skins and there's very little skin contact. And it makes it difficult because you want to get wines that have quite a bit of character, and to get character, you almost need maceration. So the feat for us has been to, you know, make a product that looks as pale and light as it is with, you know, a powerful punch of flavors.
Yeah.
And that's been really what's been the most difficult. But it's a, everything is an accumulation of detail, you know, it's a chain of links. And the amount of effort that we've had to put into making these rosés, if we would have made the same effort in red wine or white wine, we would have probably excelled so much more. But here you get 30% more for so much more work, whereas in red wine you'd get 70% more for the amount of work that we've put in. So it's probably the most difficult product that we've ever had to make, and we've made red and white for decades. So in any case, I'm thrilled to have been able to produce these wines. I am drinking so much of it myself. I don't think I've ever drunk as much rosé in my life. But it's and it just agrees with me. It agrees with the foods that I want to eat, and it's just a wonderful drink.
I want you to comment, please, on the, because I watched the video that was on the website. It was a wonderful 11-minute video that was with you and Patrick Lyon.
Yes.
And I must say, do you enjoy Tom Jones' music, or who put together the music for the video?
Oh, it's actually my brother-in-law, and I've always liked music. And on some of our labels, on the Poussin Rosé that we were talking about, you know, there's a quote about Edith Piaf and
Yes.
So music and wine has always sort of gone together. It's always nice to turn a bit of music on and to sip on a bit of wine. And basically, no, I like all types of music, Tom Jones, and as well as some Sinatra. And I think the last video has this song called Making Whoopee.
Yeah. Okay, now talk to us about this. I haven't seen anyone do this before, and maybe it's just because I haven't seen it. But Patrick Lyon is using dry ice or you know, very cold carbon dioxide to cool down the grapes. Talk to us about that.
Well, we originally, you know, the problem is in Provence is that in our area it's over 90 degrees more than 3 months a year. And heat, while you're picking grapes, create oxidation. It's the principle of a refrigerator. The idea is as soon as you pick a grape or pick a bunch, you know, it immediately starts to oxidize, which means that it immediately starts to turn. And so good wine is made through deduction. And you know that if you want to conserve your fruit as much as you can, it's the concept of a refrigerator, of putting everything into some place that's cold. So we pick in these small crates, and in these crates we put some dry ice in there to bring the temperature down. And then as soon as it gets into the winery, everything is brought down from 20-some-odd degrees to 8 degrees.
Wow.
So it's just a process of bringing the temperature down a bit to keep it from oxidizing. The key is to get the grapes in as quickly as possible. And everything has to stay closed circuit because, you know, because of the elegance and the paleness and the lightness of these products, it's very easy for them to go off very quickly. So it's just a measure that we've put into place and another link in the chain to be able to get to the quality that we want to get to. And we seem to be getting better at it every year because our marks in the Wine Spectator, for example, have risen every year with Garus.
Yeah.
And bit by bit, the more you do it, I guess the better you get at it. But I'm thrilled with the whole project. I think Rosé's got a tremendous future. I think it's had a bad name in the past. And it's especially driven by women today. And it's lot of women have put this on the map. You know, the men are big sort of red wine drinkers. And the old concept, you know, back in the days before wine was being drunk in the U.S., people drank whiskey, and if you didn't drink whiskey, if you drank wine, you were a sissy. So now that wine has come of age, it's mostly red and it's mostly white, and rosé had always been sort of, you know, a bit of a sissy's drink. Well, now it's become quite serious, and the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
When on a final note here, for years, when I interview red winemakers, I always want to know if they have a secret stash of a dry rosé. To me, the way somebody treats a rosé really shows their winemaking skill and their respect for the grapes and the wine.
That's absolutely correct, because Patrick will tell you that it's the most difficult thing that he's ever had to make as far as the accumulation of detail that has to go in to get these iodine-y, delicious, light-style, quaffable rosés. You know, the funny thing is that I used to have a vineyard in Bordeaux, and we used to always count about a half a bottle per person in Bordeaux, you know, at the time of dinner when we were receiving people. And now, with these rosés and in Provence, it's a bottle a person that we have to count. Because it's just the quaffability of it or the drinkability of it is quite something. So it's just a fabulous drink, and anybody who doesn't take rosé, I think, today, seriously, I think, is a bit of a has-been, to tell you the truth. And hasn't quite understood the trend of what's going to happen. So pink is in, rosé is in, and I'm thrilled to be part of it and thrilled to have taken the lead.
Sasha Lachine, thank you so very much for your time today on Wine & Dine.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Sasha Lachine, we will have links up for you to learn more. Chateau d'Esclan. You're listening to Wine and Dine. You're listening to iWine Radio.